Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Almost 4 o'clock indeed. Now, there's a must-see documentary on the telly tonight, 10:15 on RTE 1, The Land of Slaves and Scholars, written and presented by Blind Boy, who's on the line now. Hello, Blind Boy.
How are you, Ray? What's the crack? How are you getting on?
Good to talk to you. Congratulations. It's a great work. I really enjoyed it. It was thought-provoking, very informative, and just well done. Congratulations. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You must be happy with it, are you?
Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled. I spent a year making it, and I mean, at the end of the day, I'm making a documentary about something that I'm genuinely deeply curious about, you know. A lot of the time, sometimes, like, there were reviews about this documentary, and the reviews were saying that it's not dull, that a lot of history documentaries are dull. And sometimes, but sometimes with television, they bring a presenter in and the presenter doesn't really care about, you know, what's being made. But for me, I wrote this thing. I'm very, very curious about early medieval Irish history. I'm very curious about early Christianity. And I'm coming at it from the perspective of being an Irish writer. Like, I'm not religious. I don't believe in God. I view Catholicism as something that was kind of done to me in school. You know, I didn't ask for it. But I suppose the central question I have with this documentary is, like, Ireland's a tiny country. Absolutely. We've half the population of London. But our cultural footprint is massive around the world, in particular when it comes to writers. The best writers in the English language consistently are Irish. And I wanted to find out, is early medieval Christianity, like the monks and the saints, does that play a part in the Irish writing tradition? And it does. It really does.
And the brilliant thing as well is you put humanity at the centre of the documentary as well. All of these people we talk about, monks and all that, they were people. The same as you.
They were human beings.
Yeah, same as you and I, you know, and everything that comes with being human, they experienced it as well. So it starts from maybe a negative position and ends up very positive, which is great. There's a couple of standout facts that people won't know, and we'll get those out of the way before we discuss other things. So St. Patrick wasn't the first Christian in Ireland?
No, again, like, Patrick was the first person in Ireland to ever write anything down on a piece of paper. That's what Patrick did. And that's why we know all about Patrick. And everything we know about Patrick is from things he wrote about himself. And that's it. But there was a fellow called Palladius. He was from Gaul. And Palladius was the first ever bishop of Ireland. He was about 50 years before Patrick. He'd been sent here because there was a tiny amount of Christians already here in Ireland. But Patrick was the one who came here and he did a pretty good job at converting the Irish to Christianity. But here's the thing. What I like to look at is, yes, Christianity is a belief system, but it's a belief system that brought with it this brand new revolutionary technology of writing.
Hey.
That's a big one to get our heads around, to think of writing. Imagine showing a book to someone 1,500 years ago. Here's this thing full of pages and there's marks inside, and I can. So what Patrick did is he was able to go to the Irish kings who came from an oral culture, and he said to these kings, we can get monks to write your name in this book, and this will say that you own this land, and we can write in bits of the Bible as well. Yeah. So Christianity,
they could literally write their own history, even true or not true.
That's what writing did. It gave it power, and it also allowed society to advance a little bit more beyond what you could do with an oral culture. But everything we know about the saints as well, it's hagiographies. And a hagiography is a very mad, fantastical biography written about a saint. I mean, apparently St. Bridget could control bees with her mind. I doubt she was able to do that.
She had a cloak big enough to spread over the Curragh Plains. Blind Boy.
Yeah, so wonderful stories. Yeah. They were like superheroes, you know, wonderful stories.
And why were they written? Why were the saints' lives written by the monks?
I mean, it was a bit like Harlan, I suppose. Each monastery, see, Ireland didn't have towns. So when monasteries came with Christianity, that was the closest thing we had to towns. But the monasteries used to fight with each other. The monasteries used to go at war with each other. So monasteries used to be like, we've got the best saint. And our saint can do this and do that. Yeah. the Saints, it became like oral folklore. The Saints became like Sean McCool, you know what I mean? Hmm. So we've got the best Saint. And also, you know, our Saint is buried here and people want to be buried here. Even the round towers that we grew up in school learning that the round towers were a way for the monks to escape from Vikings when they invaded. It wasn't. The round towers were just, it's like the spire.
Mine is bigger than yours, sort of thing.
We've the biggest spire. Look how class my monastery is. Invest in this monastery.
Yeah, yeah.
And international tourism was a big deal too, because Ireland was seen as a very holy land. So, like, I went to St. Patrick's Purgatory up in Loch Derg. Like, very, very wealthy people in early medieval Europe would travel from France or even further to go into this terrifying cave up in Loch Derg, and they would visit hell. And that was St. Patrick's Purgatory. So there was a tourism industry too.
And speaking of tourism, you went out to Skellig Vihil, and you're in the Beehive Huts. What was that like?
Oh, it was phenomenal. It was like, I'm not religious, but it was. I experienced it as spiritual. And when I say spiritual, I felt it in my bones. I felt it in my heart. The wonder of nature. It's so wild to see Ireland as wild as that. You don't get that opportunity. Hmm. Very lucky as well to have gone out there when it was sunny. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and there was real high UV. And when you film anything with high UV, you get a natural glow. So the footage we captured was fantastic. But even seeing the puffins, like, I'd never been beside a puffin. And
there's a lovely moment, Blind Boy, which I'll share with our listeners. When you're doing a piece to camera and a puffin flies by and you say, just got an interruption there from a puffin, so they left it in. Have you read Emma Donoghue's book, Haven?
No, I have not. No. What's it about?
Well, it's about three monks, well, an abbot and two monks on Skellig Vihil, writing manuscripts in those beehive huts. And, you know, the measure of any good book, as you know yourself, because you're a writer, is that you're there and you're very much there. Mm-hmm. It's well worth the read. Well worth the read.
I'll give that a crack.
Yeah. And your thoughts then on monks and this laborious work of transcribing manuscripts. Glorious work, but boring.
It depends what you mean by boring.
There you go.
Something I explore in the book, or explore in the documentary, is I want to find out about, like, human beings. Mm. Everything we know is from fantastical stories that were written down, but these were real life human beings, and we know they existed. And one theory that I have and put forward is, like, maybe a lot of these monks may have been autistic people or may have been neurodivergent in some way. Like, I was diagnosed autistic about 2 years ago. And just the idea of, here's this place you can go to, you can wear the exact same clothes every single day. You can focus entirely on your interests. No one disturbs you. There's very little social expectations, and there's social isolation, and everything is routine based. And the life of a monk would be very tasty for someone who's autistic or neurodivergent. And it's possible that structures like this, the thing with being autistic or neurodivergent, how I experience it, I don't experience it as a disability. For me, it's the structures of society that don't suit me. So things like school was very difficult for me. Autistic people, I think 70% of autistic people can't find employment. But, like, the job that I do at the moment, where I write a podcast each week and I follow my curiosity, I'm a perfectly functioning, healthy, mentally healthy person because my environment suits my needs. But if I was in a job, or if I was in a situation like when I was back in school, I would not be a mentally healthy person. I'd be very, very upset. So I wonder that about the monks. Was this a structure that existed for neurodivergent people? And I speak to a psychiatrist, Pat Bracken, in the documentary too. Also people who are schizophrenic, people who hear voices. Mm. At one point in time, now this is medicalized. And Pat, as a psychiatrist, speaks about this, how we medicalize people who hear voices and give it a diagnosis. But there may have been a time in history where hearing voices was not medicalized, and this practice was rewarded in the community, and these people were seen as holy people, spiritual people who could hear God.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So your diagnosis, Blind Boy, why did you seek a diagnosis in the first place?
Because, like, I was doing my podcast every single week, and
which involves a huge amount of work. Tell people
massive,
just,
but I don't consider it work.
I know, but you write it, and it's an hour long, so it's an hour long monologue, for want of a better description.
I write about 14,000 words a week, okay,
wow.
And I work on the podcast 5 days a week. On a Tuesday, I literally, because I have an office, that's what I do. I have an office. On a Tuesday, I go into work at 7 in the morning, and I don't leave till maybe 2 or 3 in the morning. So I can.
So that's recording and editing.
Recording and editing and writing.
Right.
Like, so I'll pull a 22-hour day, and I do not consider that to be work, and I don't mind that I don't sleep.
Isn't that wonderful, though?
For me, it's great. Yeah, but, you know, I'm very thankful that I have a job that rewards that, you know?
You're lucky. You see yourself as lucky.
I'm very, very lucky. Yeah, I'm very, very lucky that I can... I don't see this as work. Like, I'm consistently obsessed. I'm consistently curious. Mm. This isn't work for me. This is the way that I am, you know?
So go back, sorry, to the original question. Why did you seek a diagnosis?
Because a lot of people who were listening to my podcast said, I'm autistic and you sound pretty autistic. You might want to get that checked out. And that's pretty much it, yeah.
How did that make you feel that people were sort of doing a layman's diagnosis of you?
That's how a lot of people get diagnosed, to be honest. I mean, the thing is that the criteria for diagnosis, it's changed a lot in the past 10 years. So I wouldn't have been, I would have really benefited from a diagnosis as a kid in school, because school was very difficult. But just back then, I wouldn't have fit the criteria. So the criteria has changed. And they might change it again in 5 years. I mean, this is, when it comes to diagnosis, it comes from this manual called the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual, and it's consistently changing, and sometimes people disagree with it. For instance, up until the 1970s, like, being gay was in this manual. You know what I mean? So we do have to be cautious about these manuals.
Yeah, they revisit and
all the time. I could be not autistic in 2 years. In 2 years, I'm serious. They could decide, oh, that's not what...
So podcasting suits you, and writing suits you.
I love it.
I was listening to your most recent podcast, so it begs the question: how's your ma?
Oh, my ma's wonderful. She's going to be so happy that I'm on the radio. I was speaking on the podcast about
corporate media.
All she cares about is whether I'm in the local paper. If I'm in the Limerick Post, then she's happy, because then she can speak to the neighbours about it. And that's it. I could be over in London speaking to 4,000 people. And she's like, I don't care. I don't know what that is. But if I'm in the Limerick Post, that's it. I'm sorted. So that's extra turkey at Christmas dinner.
Did you ever make the cover of the RT Guide, Blind Boy?
Never the RT Guide, no.
And it's not something you aspire to, I'd imagine.
I do not aspire to be on the cover of the RT Guide. I don't think I belong there. Yeah. Ireland's Own. I wouldn't mind a cover Ireland's Own.
I'd say that could be easily arranged. Will you explain the eyebrows? And is that a golden retriever, the dog in the documentary?
Yeah, that's a golden retriever. I just wanted to put... The thing is with the documentary is I was playing around with iconography. So I wanted to dress a bit like the Bull McCabe, right? So half Bull McCabe, half Michael Collins. I was having crack with that. And then I was thinking, because it's about when you're doing a documentary, the person who's there, they have to be somewhat authoritative. You want to believe this person. But I have a bag in my head. So who wants to listen to someone with a bag in their head? So I dressed a little bit Bull McCabe and a little bit Michael Collins. But then I said, what if I got a dog as well? And I'm navigating Ireland with a dog. Yeah. And then I thought, the dog looks a bit serious. So we put eyebrows on the dog. We put a set of eyebrows on the dog. And the dog had its own makeup artist and everything.
And the dog was fine with that. That's important that people know that.
The amazing, beautiful dog. Yeah. And for me then on set too, the dog was a lovely calming influence, you know. Because I actually don't like being on camera at all, to be honest.
Do you not?
No. I much prefer my voice and writing and that. The camera is just something I have to do. But if I had a choice, I wouldn't be on camera at all in this documentary. I much prefer doing voiceover.
So you're in the middle of your 3 weeks of fame, which you dip into every so often. How's it going for you, your 3 weeks?
My 3 weeks of fame. It'll be grand. I'll have nothing on TV next week, and then no one's going to ring me up asking me to be on the radio, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, because two things. Because I watched, did you read about Erskine Fogarty last week? Somebody alerted me to the fact that Blackboard Jungle got a mention in it. I didn't realise it was like nearly the spine of the thing, but
I wrote a short story a couple of years ago called Did You Read About Erskine Fogarty? And we made it into a film. You can see it on the RTE player. Robbie Sheehan's in it, but It's about a character called Erskine Fogarty who loves facts. And when he was in school, he won Blackboard Jungle. And but that's the school that I went to, Art School Reach in Limerick.
They did. They won it, yes. They did.
Won Blackboard Jungle. Yes. And we found that exact footage and put it into the film.
Yeah.
But that was an awful lot of pressure on anyone then, you see. The thing is with me, because there's a little bit of myself in the story, I obviously, being autistic, I'm very good with facts. But I was never allowed on the debating team or anything like that in school because I was too poorly behaved.
Uh-huh.
And I used to always say to myself, you know, we won Blackboard Jungle, but I could win it again if you just give me one shot. I could win Blackboard Jungle. But I was never allowed because I was too much of a little shit. Oh, I can't curse on the radio. Sorry, Ray.
No, that's fine. But I got a phone call last week. You'll be interested in this. From somebody in here saying, would it be a good idea to bring Blackboard Jungle and get all the old teams back and they could play against each other? So it could be the old Art School Reese team back together.
That'd be amazing, actually. Yeah. That'd be great.
Because
we need something like Blackboard Jungle. It's wonderfully good crack.
Quaint,
although,
wonderfully,
you know what,
quaint.
Though? Different story now with mobile phones and AI, not as much crack.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I meant that when I said it. It's a must-see documentary, The Land of Slaves and Scholars. It's on tonight at 10:15. And of course, if you don't catch it there, it'll be on the player, as is. Did you read about Erskine Fogarty? And it's Robbie Sheehan to you, Robert Sheehan to the rest of us. Is that the way it is?
Oh, he doesn't like being called Robbie. Yeah. Robert.
But he's in the credits, it's Robbie as well. So did you do that to annoy him?
That's a mistake.
Was it? Right.
Because we call him Robbie in real life and then we messed up and it's like it's supposed to be Robert. There was a tight deadline.
Oh, right.
He's Robert Sheehan,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And Topographica Hibernica is the current book, isn't it? Is that the current book?
Oh, that's out on paperback.
Yes, yeah,
I know.
I know it's last year. I have it at home.
That's my collection of short stories.
Yes,
yeah, that's my collection of short stories.
And
I'm thinking about the next book now.
And the Blind Boy podcast drops every Wednesday and worth a listen. Great talking to you, Blind
All
Boy.
Right.
Yeah, good luck
God
with that.
Bless. Have a good one. Bye bye.